Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, heroes. You can clap. It's fine. And welcome to the 2023 Skyjacks Gen Con live show.
Wow. Yes.
Okay.
Folks, we've got an exciting show for you. With me is Nathan Blades.
Hello, contestants. Hello, contestants. I am your androgynous AI game show host from the future, Nathan Blades. This is now my voice, tabletop RPG designer, streamer, voice actor, and general internet ne'er-do-well. It is a pleasure to be in America for the very first time.
And, of course, we also have Tyler Davis.
Hey!
What's up, everybody? I'm Tyler Davis, writer, director, performer, just a guy.
And on strike.
On strike. I'm on strike. Yeah. Pay us.
We did check with the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. This is fine. This is fine. We're okay.
James texted me like 2-3 weeks ago, like, is it okay if we do this? And I was like, I have no idea. So I reached out to my union and I'm good. We're good.
We have a special presentation for you tonight because we are about to play a brand new role-playing system that is not the Skyjacks role-playing system. This system is based on two games. One is The Last Shot by Grant Green, and by extension, it is based on Final Bid, and I'm trying to remember the name of the person who designed Final Bid, and it is escaping me. And see people, I'll edit this in post, and the real name of the game will appear, and everybody will know the name of the designer.
Hi, everyone. This is Allie, your friendly neighborhood editor, here to adjust some details for you, our beloved audience, at this Gen Con live show. The game that James is debuting with this show is inspired by two games. One is called Last Shooting by Grant Green, and the second one is called Final Bid by Vel Mini. These two games were influences for James when he was developing this game system to be played for this reason, at this place, in this time. We hope you enjoy the show. Bye-bye.
It is a system where characters take control of the scene by bidding valuable aspects of themselves. So the two characters that you are about to see here tonight are going to reveal a great deal of information about themselves to you. And you are going to learn new information about these characters. We are going to learn new information about these characters.
You'll finally learn my character's measurements.
We did sit down at this very fast spaghetti dinner and go through everything that we know about one of these characters. So that was quick. It was quicker than you'd expect it to be. With this, we are going to start playing. And to do that, but without revealing names of your characters, I'm first going to ask you both questions. The first question is, what called you to the sky?
Well, I would say it is a bid for anti-colonial revolution.
Tyler, what first called your character to the sky?
I'm going to go ahead and say an escape from a dire situation.
Ooh, I like that. And the next question, what called you to become a corsair?
For freedom in myself and others.
Okay. And Tyler, what about yours?
Let's say something to the effect of it's the greatest thrill. There's nothing that beats it.
Oh, I like that. I like that. Well then, I am going to have you introduce your characters. There are the blanks that mm-hmm. you will fill in here. Mm-hmm. And while they are looking that over, I will set a bit of our scene. We are in the sky, on the skyship Uhuru. Wind whistles past the planks and boards on the ship. The headframe creaks, the headframe moans as the ship is tossed about by the tail edges of a maelstrom. Far in the distance, the seasons are changing rapidly, playing hell with anything on the ground that bears different by season. Trees grow leaves, shed leaves, and bark strips from the rest of the tree as wind whips. In the captain's quarters above the skyship Uhuru, we find Oromar Vale. He has a far and distant expression on his face. He stares forward, past the boards of the ship, past perhaps even the storm itself. His battle is internal. Although the wind threatens his ship and his crew, he knows he will weather that storm. The storm in question that he worries over is in his heart. Nathan, please introduce yourself using the fill-in-the-blank format that mm-hmm. I've established. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I am Oromar Vale. One day, I will become a living legend. Enemy to the selfish crimson coin. Together, we were the brightest star to sprout from the earth. And alone, I am insistent to be right.
Tyler, please introduce your character.
I got half these filled out.
I gave you a lot of time.
Let's see. I am Calivar. One day, I will be untouchable. Enemy to those who know better. Together, we were a force. Alone, I am still a force.
Ooh. This game works in scenes, but first we need to lay a little groundwork. And for that, for scene one, when we met, the first thing that I need to know is when these two characters met, had each heard the call of the sky?
So I believe that in the kind of what we've scattered in lore across playing the game and improvising, we've had us kind of quite simultaneously be interested in going into the sky, but the call to the sky. But Oromar's route is different from Calivar's because Calivar did not join the Red Feathers at any point. So while it did so at the same time, there's probably a different reason or a different boat or method that you took to get there.
Yeah.
What kind of would have immediately summoned you up there?
Maybe like standing, like being called to trial for like something that he'd done in his youth.
Yeah, I like that.
I feel like probably Calivar has always been some kind of grifter, some kind of like con person. And I think he's just been like captured and like stands trial because there's like, you've been caught one too many times, my guy.
Then to clarify further, is the first time that Calivar and Oromar met when they were in the sky, or did they meet at some time before this? Because you're both from Bandari.
I would love there to be, and I can just establish this, so I don't know where I need to preclude with.
No one can stop you.
Everything we say is canon.
I am powerless.
I love the idea of what is essentially like high fantasy, like summer camp of a thing. Like we have encountered each other And in the kind of like, oh, people go adventuring in the world of Sphere. People train to be able to be in the sky, and that requires combat skills. It requires camping. It requires those kind of like survivalist stuff. And we, you know, did the equivalent of high fantasy summer camp.
I'm going to no but this for with Bendari. When the Red Feathers came to Bendari, there were no skyships.
Mm.
Bendari was one of the greatest sailing nations to ever grace Sphere.
Mm.
But of course, the seas became quite dangerous for a while. And then the Red Feathers showed up with their flying ships before you left. But I do want to say yes to the summer camp that gave you adventuring skills.
Mm.
So I think what I want to establish is that the children of Bendari, even if Bendari cannot sail, even if it is not safe for Bendari to sail, they still train to become sailors.
Mm-hmm.
After the stars fell, the old city of Bendari, old Bendari, was a magnificent metropolis. There were tall buildings. There was a magnificent dock full of tall ships with sails, Orimar's father said, towered to the clouds themselves. When the stars fell, the sea gathered itself up, and it picked up every great Bendari ship in the harbor, and it poured it onto the land. Those ships were frozen in the ground, smashed into the dirt, sand, and earth of Sphere. But the people of Bendari survived that, and those survivors used concrete to cover those ships and turn them into the homes of Bendari citizens. Those frozen ships are what many Bendari who grew up after the stars fell grew up in and around. And one ship in particular, halfway into the woods of Bendari, became a favorite play place of Bendari children. And that is the place where Orimar and Calivar sharpened their steel. It was a place where you played sailor, the great legacy of the people of Bendari. The legacy that you knew somehow, some way, you would one day reclaim. There wasn't an official curriculum for this. It was something that I think every child in Bendari sensed that they would have to discover for themselves. And I think no two were more eager than Orimar and Calivar. So I think the answer to that question is yes. You had both heard the call to the sky, but you wouldn't have called it that. You perhaps thought it was a call to the sea, a call to the legacy of your people. My next question is, how did your opponent's reputation precede them?
Hmm. I mean, how early does your delinquency start?
I'm over here trying to like, it's like, is there a way for me to kind of like add in where it's like, Calivar is here at this camp under a different name.
Ooh, yeah.
I feel like if it's like standardized and it's like known that it's like, it feels like a summer camp that you send your kids off to if you can afford it.
Mm.
And Calivar's parents like can't. And so, but.
This is interesting. I'm going to follow along with you.
Yeah.
And the thing that I wanted for the people of Bendari, for them to not be capitalists, because
okay.
I think it is important for the Red Feathers to come in and introduce that poison.
Mm. Right.
But I do kind of like the idea of Bendari's not being perfect either, of having complicated and imperfect laws that still have injustice sewn into them. And I think you are allowed to play in this place if your parents are in good standing with the people of Bendari. If your parents have committed a crime, you are barred from certain things and you had to fake your way in.
Yeah. So I think there's at some point someone made a call for like doing a roll call for like an Antoine Hutchins.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
And Calivar's hand shot up.
Okay.
And that's me.
Mm-hmm.
And throughout summer camp, he will be known as Antoine. But the real Antoine didn't check in.
Mm. Sure. Know. Oh, wow.
We don't know. Here's the thing. Here's the
man,
thing, we don't
that
know.
Kid gave me terrible know. Directions. Where is this place?
So, how did your opponent's reputation precede them?
I mean, I think a rumor quickly goes around after, like, night three.
Yeah.
That at, like, midnight, when we're all... curfew's, like, 10. We're adventurers, but, you know, you got to get your beauty sleep. And there's already a thing of, like, there are kids that are fighting by the campfire ring at 11. And one kid has beaten every single person so far. And I'm like, oh, well, I guess I have to stay up late then. Oh, no. How devilish. I'm like already hearing rumors that the A, fights going on that aren't sanctioned ones. And yes. B, that like, oh, and they've never lost. Ooh, juicy.
Yeah. I love this. Kalvar, what about you?
I think that there is a... like very early on, probably like the first or second day, because we are still training to be sailors.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there is like an introductory course where like a group of people get together and like one like leader like leads everyone through. Is like, show me your knots. Show me all the knots that you know. And like, and there's this one kid, like there was this kid, Oromar, and it just made its way through just by hearsay through the talks that like Oromar just kept coming up with new knots. And then I feel like it got to the point where he showed, there were like two knots that like he showed the instructor, that the instructor was like, this isn't, they're like, this is nothing. And then they pull on it and like it holds. And he's the knot guy.
Today, for the few people who know the Bendari legends and the many people who know the legends of Oromar Vale, it is known that in the great city of Bendari, their greatest king, their first king, the great King Jina, was tested by the sea itself, was challenged to show that a human, that a person, could sail upon the waves. And the sea challenged the great King Jina to tie knots, to show that he could make waves in his strings, in his threads, in his ropes. As many waves as sit upon me, the vast ocean. And King Jina said, yes, I will do this. I will do this from this when the sun rises and until the sun sets. Now, of course, at this camp, they did not start when the sun rises on this knot exercise, but they did start late enough in the day that a young Oromar Vale was certain that he could tie knots until the sun set. And so he studied every knot known to the Bendari people. But more than that, when the day grew long, when the shadows nearly mixed with the shade of the evening, and the moon's light lit the sky, to stretch the hours, Oromar made new knots. No one knows if it's true. But if you know Oromar Vale, if you have seen Oromar Vale, there is a part of you that will believe that. Next, what called you to conflict?
I mean, I have to go see who is beating every single kid.
We established a fight ring.
That's obvious. Okay.
Somebody came out with two black eyes. I'm like, yo. All right. I thought this was sword fighting and still?
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
How old were you at this point, being aware that you left with the Red Feather Syndicate when you were 14?
Mm-hmm. I mean, this is now officially Pokemon rules.
Yeah, bud.
If you're strong enough to go out on these woods and fight at 10, then you were clearly. We maybe push it to 11, just, you know, to sway people's feelings. And this is clearly a setting where no 11-year-olds are under serious, strenuous danger. We haven't established any lines and veils, but I figured that we would go and establish that up front.
Yep.
Nobody's dying out here at 11, just embarrassed. I stay up late. I wait to see the lantern outside the cabin or whatever to go away.
How old is Kalvar?
You said 11?
I said 11.
Nine.
Yeah!
Now, 9-year-old's dying. No.
Yeah. We're only protecting people who are close to being adults, which is the only type of person that counts.
can I lay something on? I like the idea that that Calavar, this little 9-year-old who's just kicking ass, like his calling card is like, if he beats you, which he will, he'll take one of your boots for the night. And so you have to come back to him the next morning
to get your boot back. Oh, how many boots does he have now?
Right,
that people
now?
Who've never come back to admit they were defeated.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Well, here's the thing. There's a lot of people walking around just kind of like a little lopsided. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because like no one wants to. Because also,
I don't know what you're talking about, man. I got two boots. I'm just not wearing them right now.
And so, yeah, I think there's a lot of kids like walking around being like, just very early on being like, oh no, my ego is challenged by this 9-year-old. Mm-hmm. And so he's got 8 boots. Eight left boots.
I love that. I love that. And I think we'll say that in Bendari, the trials of adulthood, like you actually take that trial when you're around 14. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there are kids here ranging from, you know, like 11 or from 9, I guess. Nine is probably the youngest, 9 to 14. So there are some 14-year-olds who are pretty embarrassed pretending that they just don't feel like having two boots right now. So, Nathan, before you were about to narrate and start the scene, there are things that we have to do because we have to find out who controls the scene.
Oh, yes.
But I do have one final question because I must know, both of you being so young, how do you look? What does an 11-year-old Orimar Vale look like? Hey heroes, it's James, your game master, and welcome to the mid-roll. Heroes, this is of course the audio from our 2023 Gen Con live show. I'm so excited to finally get the chance to share it with all of you. When we recorded it all the way back in August, I had no idea how or when this was going to come up in the show, but I'm really glad that we figured out the framing device of this tattooing scene. Obviously, the narration that we did at the beginning to set the scene for the live show doesn't exactly match up with what we did here, but I think it's better to picture this as the story that Orimar is telling to his tattoo artist / metaphysician, rather than him flashing back to a different time he was on the ship during a maelstrom that he also remembered all of this. A huge thank you to Tyler and Nathan for doing the live show with me and for wrapping up that game after the live show. So all of the live show listeners are going to obviously be rehearing this. However, there is going to be a new conclusion to this because we actually got to finish the game. A huge thanks to everyone who went out and reviewed Campfire Cards. We finally hit 50 reviews. I have emailed one of the lucky people who sent in a receipt for purchasing the game. They will be able to pick the subject of the new Skyjack short story that I'm going to write. So if you entered that contest, check your inboxes. Folks, coming up in November, we're going to be premiering Skyjack's Courier's Call Season 3 and Skyjoust on its own feed. Finally, I am making the final audio adjustments, I hope, to Skyjoust, getting it into position where we are going to be able to air it. I sincerely hope to have that done next week. And we should be launching Skyjoust on its own feed shortly after that. And with that, we will have a very exciting announcement. Brace your inboxes, especially if you subscribe to the Skyjack's mailing list. And if you don't, you can head to bit.ly/skyjackscrew to sign up. Also, if you want mailing list announcements, I think Patreon does non-paying memberships now. We might use that as a kind of de facto mailing list. So if you aren't a patron of One Shot yet, but do want to be a patron one day, go sign up now. I'll try to throw some free stuff your way at certain points. Yeah, that's patreon.com/oneshotpodcast. And of course, thank you to everybody who supports us on Patreon. We would not be able to make this production or any of the other wonderful things we do here on the One Shot Network without your support. please head over to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and sign up to back us. It makes a huge difference to me and everyone who makes this show. Now then, a quick word from our sponsor. And with all that out of the way, let's get back in the sky. What does an 11-year-old Oromar Vale look like?
I mean, considering his kind of path in life was to go work with the Red Feather Syndicate at some point relatively soon, and they're probably going to be quite picky about the people he takes, I figure he's got some prep school energy to
Ooh.
This. There are shorts involved. You know?
Well, they're easy and fun to wear.
Yeah. but yeah. I think it's that. He has a big neckerchief going on, and the kind of like horizontal black and white like sailor stripe style top.
I like that so much, and you know, as a nod to our good friend John at Kessler, that's a red handkerchief for sure.
Yeah, there was it's like a family embroidery project kind of thing. So a lot of family members have kind of like sewn patterns and stuff into it, and he's currently wearing it.
I'll remember that for later. Tyler, what does Calvar look like?
I think he's got like, I don't want to say short, but also he's nine.
He's going to be shorter than everybody else.
Yeah. He can be a little shorter than everybody else. I feel like he's got, it's not like a burlap sack, but it is a very uncomfortable top that's too big. And I think it was something that he, now that he's kind of on his winning streak, he's like wearing it very proudly. And he's also, he's got pants. He's got normal pants.
Normal pants.
But yeah, normal pants. Mm-hmm. I think he has more, he's like got sandals on, but I think around his neck, he has like the shoelaces of all of the boots that he has taken. And so it's like, it's a very like kind of haphazard, kind of like show-offy in how like poorly braided together these like shoelaces are. But
I bet those knots are shit.
All right.
He gonna learn, though.
Well, we will figure out who learns, as there's going to be a bid for control of this scene. Mm-hmm. The way this game works, each of these players is going to offer a bid. A bid comes in two forms. The first is a bid of creation, a bid of establishment, where they will create a new fact about their characters based on a list of traits that they have on their sheet. Mm-hmm. For this first scene, you may only bid treasures or human traits. That is establishing something that is a part of this character's history and a part of this character's story. They are both going to right now decide on what they would like to open their bid with. And we will determine who has established the more significant thing to their character's history and story, and that player will be in charge of the scene. However, each can then have two opportunities to offer raises to create new important elements that started here. So we're starting with one, but you will be able to raise for more. And whomever creates the most important and significant fact about themselves will be able to narrate how this scene concludes. I saw both of you jockeying for who is going to be in control, who is going to win. Dig deep and you might win now.
No, I'm happy to set that up.
Yeah, you go first.
Things that you end up bidding, just to check.
Yes.
Even if they don't win, they're still established as being true that can then be used later.
Exactly. So they will be true and they will remain to be true. Until, as we get to later in our story, you can keep writing. As we get to later into our story, we can talk about the second type of bid. Because there is the bid of creation. But creation is not the only thing that happens during a human life. There is also a bid of destruction. They can offer the facts that they have created for themselves to be destroyed for them to lose the important things that they create for themselves throughout the history of their lives. And if that destruction is more significant, they will also be awarded control of the scene. So we will determine how Oromar and Calivar, two people who lived to be legends, built themselves, what they needed to get there, and what they had to sacrifice to get there. With that, Tyler has finished writing. Yeah, but your bids are locked in. Nathan, let's start with your bid.
The margins are scratch pad, okay?
Mm-hmm. All right, go ahead. No, I, with the mechanics established of what we are using these bids for, I have chosen the human trait of what makes you confident with the answer, a belief that vibrant courage always prevails.
Hmm. Tyler, what about your bid?
I'm going to go with signature weapon.
Ooh.
And I think that is Calivar has two rings on his right hand that are oversized. They are heirlooms from his dad, and they are, I think they're gemmed on one side, but like I would say he turns them to the gem side when it's time, when it's like he's trying to throw down.
Yeah.
Normally it's just more of like a gold band, a gold and a silver band on now his, I guess his pointer finger and his pinky. The pinky is so precariously on there, but he kind of always has it like tucked.
Sure.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay. The question that I have for you guys is, mm-hmm, between the two of you right now, who do you think offered the more significant bid?
Oh, I mean, we know for those who are into the Skyjacks lore, that the signature weapon for Calivar is different. Mm-hmm. So clearly at some point there's a switch up here, and that's juicy.
Well, yeah, but I will say, Nathan, perhaps that switch up happens because when they grow up, they move into fighting with guns and swords that
might not be. He can still be a punch guy. We've both played enough fighting games that a punch guy is still like pretty solid.
And yes, I will agree, if you want to be a punch guy in the world of Skyjacks, of course you can punch on the level of guns and swords. What I am saying is that doesn't necessarily mean that he loses the rings.
Mm-hmm.
More significant to character.
Mm.
What do we think?
I mean, you gave a life philosophy. That feels strong. We can go with that.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. We'll take that. Yeah.
No, put that spotlight on him.
Then you have the opportunity to raise, Tyler.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to offer a raise against Oromar's life philosophy, which would be creating a new trait that you feel would be even more significant than that?
And is that also still contained within treasures and human traits?
Yes, anything from treasures or human traits for that. You can also choose not to raise, but Oromar will definitely be in control of the scene and have full narrative control over how it resolves.
I think, let's go with what makes you kind. And I think Calivar has not necessarily a soft spot, but he lets people that he perceives to be worse off than him in.
Oh, wow.
He'll only try to punch up.
That is a good bid. Ooh, that's a saucy bid.
Hey, you have it. I'll let you take that one. I'm not going to raise.
No raises.
Take that narrative, friend.
No additional raises. Then it is night. We see moonlight glinting off of the waves in the harbor. The harbor of Bendari, which is now full of fake ships, after they lost their people's legacy when the stars fell. Bendari knew that there could be people coming from the sea, that many of the nations that they had encountered as sailors were not friendly places. If they couldn't build up their ships, they needed to appear to defend themselves, and after the seas turned out to be so dangerous, even for brave Bendari sailors, they felt it safer to build a harbor full of false ships, of false masts, that would ward off any potential invaders. We can see the moonlight glinting over those waves, over those fake ships, onto the sea of sand that makes up most of the town of Bendari. We see ships frozen in various states of disrepair, stretching out of the sand itself. We can see a few new buildings built out of logwood and concrete, the type of concrete that is manufactured only in Bendari, using a combination of their clay and straw. It's very strong. It does need to be replaced somewhat frequently, but it's easy to make and it is plentiful. And the Bendari people take pains to use only what is plentiful. Stretching out from that city, we can see trees waving in the wind. And in a circle of trees in a clearing, we can see the glint of firelight. The Bendari, as the children train, they train by firelight. Because the Bendari people believe in the traditions of the Grand Fire, they believe that their people owe stories to the Forest Queen in exchange for the wood that builds their ships. And children, who are many wonderful things, but talented storytellers is not like a thing that most of them are known for, maintain a fire so that the Queen can gather their stories as they play and grow. It is by the light of this very fire that we find the secret camp run by those who are preparing to become adults, who are preparing to become the thing that they have been taught is sacred and beautiful, to become Bendari sailors. It is this firelight that a collection of children gather for the fights. There's only so much tension that you can work out within the rules. It is the purview of every child to stretch themselves outside of the rules because that is where they have space to grow. And the young folk here intend to grow crooked noses. Start with your statements.
It was a moment of recognition. We were ignorant and evenly matched.
It was a moment of childish squabbling. We were ignorant of the stakes, but we were soon to prove what we had learned.
Excellent. I leave it to you to narrate your scene, being aware that Tyler has narrative control and will be able to conclude it.
Oh, okay. So it can be a vault.
Yeah.
This can be a vault where we can jump into dialogue. The scene is set.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. I think we see sort of a wide kind of aerial shot of like silhouettes in front of a fire, one having just hit the ground and another kind of like taking steps towards them. And it's like, all right, Tony, sorry, Tony, you really tried your best. We sort of like see a special of like some bloody spit hit the ground and the camera kind of like pans up and we see Antoine.
Mm-hmm. Man, this kid cheats.
Cheats.
Yeah, man.
I'm sorry. You try to get me in a headlock. I'm too slippery.
No,
Tony.
You're wearing those rings. I didn't see it in the firelight.
What rings?
You gotta have secret arms.
Oh.
I think like he says like a what rings, and like you just see like the faintest hint at the band, like the gems are on the other side. Like, I don't know what you're talking about, Tony. I don't know what you're talking about. I just keep these tucked, all right? These are my personal heirlooms, all right? Boots.
Well, your knuckles are... You gotta get your knuckles looked at, man.
Hey, Tony. I think you just spent a lot of time looking at my knuckles. Boots.
There were a couple of children in the background like, boots, 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 boots.
Yeah.
Hey, shut up!
And Antoine sort of like reaches out his hand and kind of like gestures, the boot. You know the rules. You agreed to the rules.
Yeah. All right. Fine.
Antoine rips his boot off of his foot, throws it in the ground, walks away.
Man, I could have been sleeping.
Don't worry, you'll sleep like a baby tonight. All right.
Antoine makes whatever is considered a rude gesture for the Vandari. I don't know what it is.
And so, Antoine, we got two Antoines. Oh,
that's right. Yeah. Tony and Antoine.
And for the rest of camp, you're Tony.
Oh.
Well, off I go to sleep. Me, Tony Vornskier.
And that's the show.
Yeah. Antoine kind of like, he turns to the crowd and he kind of does like, because this is the like day, I guess, have the fights been going on for three, since?
They're quite late, I guess.
Yeah.
This is the illegal fighting ring. This
yeah. Could be a... So he kind of turns to the audience and kind of like offers up, like, well, we've been kicking ass and taking names for a while, and it's going on, it's about midnight, so I think it's time we turn in, everybody. What do you say we just call it?
Hold on.
What's that?
You're already done?
Oh, well, I've gotten, he holds up three shoelaces and like, I've been working. So,
wait, hold on. So, sorry if this is like a rude question to ask, but you've been fighting for an hour and you've only have three of those.
Hey, shut up. Antoine kind of like, throws the laces back over his shoulder, kind of like does a quick tie of them, and like, if whoever's yelling out right now wants to stand up, there's always time for an extra round.
Oh, good, because I kind of, you know, snuck out here and everything to do the this like gesturing vaguely limply between himself and Antoine, you know, fight or whatever. You probably want to do that not differently if you want those to hold in place, by the way.
Calivar, you recognize this kid. It is the kid who always goes to bed on time.
Yes. We already know each other's names.
I guess at this point it's been, and even though we've not spoken, the names have now kind of come around. So
is that nuts? Is that nuts? Wow. Celebrity and all around do-gooder snuck out past his bedtime.
Yeah, I heard you were both really good at like fighting, which cool. You seem to be, but also you seem to be a massive bully, and that I don't think that's very conducive to a healthy camp environment. So I'm going to take your sandal or whatever. Is this how this works? Like, you're specifically wearing sandals, so if you lose, you don't have to give up a boot. Is this like a silly loophole?
The sandals are a fashion choice.
And another kid who is dressed like in a shabby way that feels similar to Antoine, a kid who's hair is not done as finely, is adorned with wooden beads, as wood is the birthright of all who come from Bandari. But those who are better off have families who have time to burn designs into that wood, to decorate it, to dye it, to paint it. They're just plain wooden beads. And it is a cruelty everywhere, even those places that don't have capitalism. There are places where status is still important, and someone who grows up without that status can feel it, even in a community that generally means to be better. They have been watching Antoine's bouts night after night, smiling, as many of the people who have picked on them have lost boots. Get him, Antoine.
Antoine shoots Corey a look and just gives him like a quick nod. He's like, you got it. And then he kind of like, all right, come on up.
Okay. Why is this weird? He's like smiling, but also like, this is weird and silly and it's late. And he has a wooden sword that he has like carved himself, and it looks like a toy. It's varnished like green. All right. So who's like calling for on guard and so on?
And then Antoine punches him in the face.
No scene.
Yeah.
You're down.
There's just a. And it cuts to.
Yeah. That is where these two met. Scene two is when we united. My first question is, when you united, who was your common enemy?
I mean, at that point, if we're reuniting again...
This isn't reuniting. This is when you were united. This
united,
is the first time,
right, as a proper team together.
Yeah, this is the first time that Kalmar and Orimar are like, all right, we're on the same side.
Yeah, and that definitely feels like a post-Red Feather thing if we're capable of skipping that far forward.
Oh, you can skip almost as far forward as you want. Mm. So yeah,
or at least I like the idea of it not necessarily being the defection point yet, but we have met and that's probably the catalyst to a defection point.
So yeah, so then you're both working aboard a Red Feather ship. Or no, you're both aboard because...
Yeah.
I don't think I would...
You're not a good company fit.
You're a bad culture fit.
Great. Well, how long are we talking? How much of a time jump?
Well, Orimar joins the Red Feathers when he's 14. Yeah. So at least 3 years.
Okay.
I guess this is maybe like in some kind of like a holding cell or processing.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a brig aboard whatever Red Feather ship Orimar happens to be working on, and Kalvar happens to be a prisoner aboard.
Are we establishing what was the reason why now, or is there going to be some questions later that
no,
tie into...
No. Okay. This is a thing that I did not know about Kalvar until this evening. So what do we think Kalvar did? I mean, I think clearly the Red Feathers arrested him outside of the jurisdiction of Bandari. The Red Feathers took this kid that they perceived as a criminal to undergo whatever trial or imprisonment or terrible thing a colonial power imagines.
Maybe he's like trying to sell. He sold like a bum pistol or something.
You know what? I will. How about this? He sold counterfeit Red Feather currency.
Great.
Literally the people of Bandari can barely conceive of. Currency is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why are you doing this? So, yeah.
Do you want what for what?
I love this kid commits in what the Red Feathers mind is a serious crime.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a crime that like probably Orimar would see as that's not a crime.
Mm-hmm.
What you people do is insane.
I feel like there's, I think after, like, on the onset of the Red Feathers, like, making their way to Bandari, there's this sense of, like, oh, everybody's exchanging, like, tiny little things and getting stuff for that, and, like, oh, I can make a tiny little thing easy.
Yeah.
I'm just going to make some tiny little things and I can have all the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so I think, like, he's probably, like, walking on an easy street for, like, a couple months.
Yeah.
And like, he suddenly, in this one case, he's like, man, capitalism, great, man. I just make stuff and then people give me things. This is awesome. And then I think he's probably like out here trying to buy some new shoes or something like that. Mm-hmm. And like, he offers bits and in return, like, he's like handcuffed.
Yeah. I said the shoes.
And then we cut over to our holding cell.
Yeah, so the common enemy is apparently the Red Feathers, or at least the injustice of what has been done to Kalvar. Then what impossible task drove you here? Scotty Jacks.
Thank you.
We return once again to the long line of prospective applicants for the Skyship Uhuru. We see another person come off that line, plop down some headshots and resumes. Who does this person look like?
This person is like classic High School Musical hot kid. Fantastic. He's got his hair isn't spiked up. It just kind of looks like it naturally does that. And he's like too muscular to be. It's like when they make 25-year-olds play high schoolers on like Riverdale and stuff. Mm-hmm. He looks like that. There's a kind of vacant expression on his face. And yeah, he's like dirty, but it's not detracting from anything.
Well, all right.
All
I'm
right.
Some good vibes off of this already.
I like you too.
Oh, hey.
Hi.
Good to see you. What's your name and what are you interviewing to be a part of the ship on?
My name's Derek Pfeiffer, and I'm excited to be here. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm excited to do it. And I brought my pictures. I didn't have any photographs of me, so I drew them myself. I hope that's okay.
Okay, yeah. Well, this is a good way to start because we didn't ask it right off with the last person, and we might have put them into the wrong program. How old are you? Because we do have an orphan program and a sort of an adult track that's an actual career track, and I want to keep those separate.
Yeah. I'm not great at lying, so let's just say I would prefer not to answer that question. But if you really want me to, I will.
It's a strong boundary.
Okay. So we can circle to specific ages, but is illustration your main deal? Are you maybe looking to be a cartographer with the crew?
Oh, wow. I never thought about being a maps person, but that sounds cool. I could do that.
Knows what a cartographer is? Good first step. We've cleared at least a minimum age bracket here.
One step forward.
Oh, I know tons of cartographers.
Oh?
Gerardus Mercator and I went to high school together.
Okay.
Mm. Oh.
And have you heard of Ptolemy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So I'm getting a picture on your age range here.
Oh, whoops.
But so, I mean, I have to ask, as in an environment where we have multiple people on the crew who are older than they look, let's say, what are your secrets?
Well, let's see. You want me to tell you all my secrets? That means we must be friends. Okay, so here's one that I haven't told a lot of people. My body was destroyed, and I had to rebuild it out of turkey parts.
All right.
Oh, I've never done an interview before, so I did make something. It's a pie.
Ooh.
Okay.
What sort of pie?
Just all the berries.
Ooh.
When you say all the berries, do you mean all the edible berries or just all berries?
Oh, slowly take the pie back.
Okay. Mm. We have a bit of an Amelia Bedelia situation.
I went to high school with Amelia Bedelia.
Hold on.
Okay, so I think I have a way to narrow this down. On a scale of omnipresent to omniscient, where would you say you were?
Are they mutually exclusive?
Not necessarily, but there is a z-axis of being infinite.
Ah, oh, I live on the z.
Okay.
Right.
Infinite. There's an infinity to you. This is intriguing.
Yeah. Are you all? Wait. Are you guys infinite?
Well, pretty much. I mean, except in one of us.
I mean, I'm fucking trying, mate. Nah. No, you're clearly old enough where I can swear at you. It's
language.
Fine.
All right, I get a lot of positivity coming out of you, but I guess what do you see yourself getting up to if you were on this ship? It's a pirate ship. We're going in and out of battle and stressful situations. Honestly, a lot of times we're kind of going in undercover and with like, you know, we're deceiving people. And if you don't like to lie, I don't know if that's necessarily something that puts you on like, you know, field work.
Okay. I would stay behind for that.
Okay.
Okay.
Good to know.
But I'm great at protecting people.
Oh.
Well, that's a plus. Okay. Do you have any special skills that might help in a situation like that?
Sure. Yeah. I can fly. And
whoa.
I have this. And I sort of like reach into, it's almost like the air parts like a curtain next to me. And I reach beyond it and pull through it like the biggest anime sword you've ever seen. And it is constantly on fire.
Okay. Okay. All right.
Fantasy, I love it. Ooh, what a treat.
Great, cool. You have this cool flaming giant anime sword that you can pull out of space between spaces, but are you not into fighting?
I'll John it.
Are you? Okay. So I have some guesses. I'm going to try and narrow it down.
Oh, what are we guessing?
Your deal. Your whole business.
I can just tell you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, please.
Oh, yeah.
Just tell us your deal.
If you'd prefer to guess, I don't want to take the fun away.
No.
You do your thing.
Okay. My name's Derek Pfeiffer.
Yeah.
Lean in. I'm an angel.
Yeah, me too.
So is that what it takes now? Just everybody and their mother out is an angel. I mean, that's great. I love that for you.
Hey, no, diversity-wise, if you look at the percentage of the crew, we could probably use another angel.
I start grabbing your hands and like dancing.
There's an angel here?
It's me.
You're dancing with them.
I'm an angel. It's me.
Wow.
Wow.
What's your chore?
Oh, I have to judge the souls of the innocent.
Oh, that's easy. They're innocent.
Yeah, they're innocent. It's super easy. What's yours?
I watch.
Oh, you just watch?
Yeah, I'm a watcher. Oh. I make sure that the universe resets every time it's supposed to.
Oh, does that happen a lot?
Yeah.
About like infinity times.
Oh, well, that's a lot. That's a big job.
Yeah, okay, I should stop doing it.
Hold on. I do need to know, how did you end your previous employment situation? Because a non-zero number of people have killed their boss, which isn't something that would exclude you from being on the crew.
Oh my gosh,
but
no, never.
We probably should need to know if you've killed God.
No. I kind of didn't do my job great, so I left. Actually, if you could not tell anyone that I'm an angel, that would be really cool.
You know, we've had a pretty good track record, if not... Yeah. We're good.
Not bad.
This meeting aside, sure, yeah.
Okay, great. Because now that we're all friends, I feel like I can trust you with that information.
Also, you don't remember anything.
You did announce it during a big grand fire.
Oh, yeah.
And told everybody about it, so I do.
You got it.
And will.
You got it.
Yeah. Ugh,
what a treat. This is exciting. This is exciting for me.
I am excited.
I guess in the bid of making sure that we aren't tokenizing Gable, mm-hmm. I would be, that's a thumbs up from me, I guess. And you can teach me how to do the cool sword thing, unless that's like an angel only thing, in which case I'm sure I can plan some way to be able to do that at some point anyway.
You've got enough hobbies, Cap. Anyone can... sign me up for that master class. Let's go.
I believe anyone can do anything.
Ugh.
John it. If only you knew.
Hang on. What are we alluding to?
John.
Why do I keep getting these...
Derek just kind of looks at you sadly.
Wait, how many times have this conversation reset?
Oh, so
what do you
many?
Know about...
Are you Groundhog Day in this?
Groundhog Day. I went to high school with the groundhog.
Just to run this out, I would love to list some people from history and time and see if you went to high school with them.
Okay.
Let's go around a circle. Isaac Newton.
High school.
Okay.
Okay. So I guess I should be going farther in the past than Isaac Newton. What about Genghis Khan?
High school.
Ooh.
Okay.
Ella Fitzgerald.
Summer camp.
Oh.
King Arthur.
High school.
Oh. What? Okay. The Energizer Bunny.
Who?
Oh. Okay. So we're learning. We got it. We've got the pattern now.
All right.
I've got one.
Fictional people.
Yourself.
Oh, I've been in high school with myself so many times. And good news, I actually recently re-merged with myself.
Oh, no.
What does that mean?
Well, I had some bad
like
thoughts.
It's like Superman 3, I think.
Oh, high school.
Right.
Oh, shut up.
Well,
that's
just all right.
I'm in. I'm a yes. Let's do it.
All right.
Yeah, he's in.
I'm still not entirely sold on the reality destruction thing.
Welcome aboard.
But yeah, welcome aboard. Welcome aboard.
Here's your hat and gun.
Wow, I don't need the gun, but I'll take two hats.
Campaign Skyjacks is a One-Shot Network production. For more information, be sure to follow us on Twitter over at CampaignPod for updates about live shows and other events we might be doing. In the universe of Starwall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Starwall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Starwall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more. You can find more great gaming shows over at oneshotpodcast.com. Jonnet Kessler was played by Tyler Davis, who can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Tyler A. Dave. Tyler is on strike alongside his fellow members of the WGA and SAG-AFTRA. You can support Tyler and other striking artists by contributing to the Entertainment Community Fund, linked in our show notes. Gable was played by Liz Anderson, who can be found on Twitter at @LizAnderson_... or on her podcast, Paired. Captain Oromar Vale was played by Nathan Blades, who can be found on Twitter at @PhantomArtsENT, or streaming at twitch.tv/TheNeonCaster. I am James D'Amato, your host and game master. You can find me on Twitter at OneShotRPG or on my podcast, One Shot. The original music featured in this podcast was written, composed, and performed by Arnie Parrott. You can find him over on Twitter at Arnie Parrott or on his website, ATP Tunes. This episode was edited by Ali Grauer, who can be found on Twitter at DreamsToBecome or on her podcast, Skyjack's Courier's Call. Our logo was designed by Fiona Shea, who can be found on Twitter at Lunarum. The World of Sphere was inspired in part by the music of the Decemberists and Illimat, produced by Together Studios. This show was made in part by using a modified version of the Genesis role-playing system, designed by Sam Stewart and a team of talented professionals. There are no kings. Take flight.
Strangers who've ever been kind, and once for our friends ne'er to rise. Twice to the dearest we're leaving behind, who know we can never deny the call of the sky.